Thank you, Roger, who is also a wonderful colleague. He and I were program planners together, and I got to coordinate a number of sessions in years past. And I also will put a plug in for anybody who's not a member of the MCH section. We are a wonderful section to be a member of, so please step up if you have not already. Again, thank you for this opportunity to talk a little bit about the breastfeeding work we've been doing in our community. I don't have any financial disclosures to make. However, this study has been funded by the NIH through an NICHD, through the National Institute of Child Health and Development, my first R01, and I've just received another 5 years of funding for this same project. Yay. After it came out from under the sequester. Thank you very much. We won't talk about that anymore. I have a number of wonderful co-authors and collaborators, including a multidisciplinary team that includes individuals trained in anthropology, behavioral psychology, pediatrics, epidemiology, biostatistics, among other things, and as well as a staff and several key community partners. One is our local perinatal network, and as well as our Monroe County WIC department. So the title of my presentation was A Missing Step, and my comment is, why is it a missing step? And it's because a lot of breastfeeding initiatives we talk about get started at kind of the state and federal level, but it really requires for success to be implemented at the local level, and really to understand what to do and how to do that, you need local data. And so we've been focusing on local disparities, specifically disparities by income, so low income, not low income. And today we're going to focus on initiation, although these same data that I'm going to talk about, we will be looking at other breastfeeding outcomes as well. We just haven't gotten that far yet. So we are in upstate New York County. We have about 8,000 births. About 40% to low-income mothers. We have a major urban area in our county, and we call it the Tale of Two Cities, where we have fairly affluent suburbs around a city that's got incredibly high rates of poverty, including children living in poverty, single-family households, violence, teen pregnancy, kind of you name it. There are four main hospitals that deliver the majority of, hospital maternity services, and one of those is an academic medical center. So our sample was designed because this followed a PRAMS type approach. For those of you who are not familiar with PRAMS, it's the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring Survey or Surveillance Survey. We, however, different from PRAMS, oversampled low-income women since that was the focus of our work, and we defined that as Medicaid-funded delivery or having prenatal WIC. We anticipated a response rate among the low-income women of 35% and of 55% among the non-low-income mothers. So to be eligible, you just had to have a low-income or have a live birth in our county, and these data were from women who gave birth over a 12-month period of time starting in May of 2009. They received mailings at 4 to 5 months. We sent out nearly 2,500 surveys to get our response rates. Again, this is, slightly different than PRAMS, who sends them out a little earlier than that. The research questions that I just want to briefly talk about today are what factors predicted non-initiation of breastfeeding, and how did that differ between low-income mothers, which you'll see I'll be referring to as LIM, and non-low-income mothers. So we used the version 6 of the PRAMS, and this had about 91 questions in it at the end. And then that gets linked with the birth certificate data. So you end up with about 300 variables that range from pre-pregnancy and well into several months postpartum. So we ended up with slightly over 1,000 usable surveys. About half were to low-income women, so we've achieved our targets. And there is more detail about this survey methodology. This was published in the Maternal Child Health Journal in August of this year. Ultimately, we conducted three logistic regression models, one using all mothers, one using just low income, one using just non-low income. And then we did an all-in approach to the regression after we identified eligible variables, which I'll talk about in a moment. Our exposure was income, and our outcome was, again, non-initiation defined, and it's a very low bar, as those of you who work in breastfeeding know. It's, kind of ever breastfed once. And we won't get into the issues about measurement of breastfeeding. That's another topic altogether. So we grouped our variables into five domains, demographics, which are kind of the usual suspects, pre-pregnancy, so we had items including stress, medical conditions, whether they sought care for any health conditions, what their insurance status was. During pregnancy, we looked at smoking, other risk factors, prenatal care, and this item is called healthcare provider counseling, which, again, anybody who knows the PRAMS, women get asked, do you recall if your healthcare provider talked to you about, and there's a list of items, and those include, you know, pregnancy spacing, smoking during pregnancy. There's a whole array of them that are part of that, and we collapse that into one variable where you got kind of a one if you remembered hearing about that item, and a zero if you did not. And then there were a number of labor and delivery characteristics and birth outcomes. And one of the neat things about this data set is that it's got a lot of data in it, and the challenge is to cull it down to something manageable, or your tables and analyses go on forever. So in order to cull that down, we did chi-squares and t-tests to assess each variable that we were interested in including to see if it was significant at a p of less than or equal to 0.1 for inclusion in the model, but it had to be significant with both the exposure and with the outcome. So it was a very conservative approach to identifying variables for inclusion. We also forced in some demographics if they weren't significant. So of the 1,000 surveys, we could only use 955 from as a part of our analysis because of some missing data on some variables. So the data represents, after weighting, a little over 6,000 mothers. We had not surprisingly, because this is consistent with national rates, we had over 82% of mothers initiated breastfeeding, but there was a difference, which you can see, between the low-income mothers were at 73%, and the non-low-income were at 86%. So there's still somewhat of a disparity there. And my colleague Brianna's like, well, we don't need to be talking about initiation anymore. And I'm not certain I don't disagree with her with that. It's like we found out a lot. That said, I think there's some things to be learned from a local level. So I want to go through the bivariate analyses because this is, I think, helpful to look at how things actually landed between the two, between our exposure and our outcome variable. So among the demographics, for example, English spoken at home was only significantly different in the initiation variable or our outcome. In Spanish spoken at home was only significant for our income, non-low income or low income. So neither of those were included in the model, even though they were kind of interesting variables. A number of these others, not surprisingly and consistent with other literature, were in fact significant. So marital status went into the model, as did maternal education. You can see what some of these distribution numbers are like. Mother Hispanic did not go in because it was only significant for income. It was not significant for initiation in terms of being different, there being a difference. Maternal race was included, as was age. However, we did decide to force Hispanic, Mother Hispanic into the model because of some of the differences in their breastfeeding behaviors. From a pre-pregnancy factors, you can see we had a large array of factors we were considering. Only four of them actually qualified for inclusion. One of them was positive health behaviors. So that's like, you know, you tried to lose weight before pregnancy. So this is in the 12 months before pregnancy, all self-report data. Healthcare seeking, did you seek care for high blood pressure or diabetes, for example? Were you taking a vitamin in the month before pregnancy? And then there's a number of questions that are related to stress, and they're grouped into these four categories of financial, emotional, traumatic, and partner-associated. Interestingly, financial stress is the only one in which it was significant in both our exposure and our outcome. Emotional stress, interestingly, was only significant for initiation, and traumatic and partner-associated were only associated with income. Again, those were not included in the model, but I just think it's interesting to see how they were, how they played out. These other ones also were only associated with income, so physically abused by partner, pregnancy intention, again, so they were not included in our model. During pregnancy, similar story, but a lot more of these were significant for both. So insurance was different for both, prenatal provider guidance, and this is that count of whether the mother recalls. being talked certain items. We have the physical abuse by partner was, again, only significant by low income. And this is physical abuse by partner during pregnancy as opposed to the previous one, which was before pregnancy. So we did not include that, but we got dental care during pregnancy. When did they start prenatal care? All those were included. And then we had several labor and birth outcomes that we chose to evaluate, and none of those were significant in both, interestingly, but we did force vaginal delivery in because of the difference between vaginal and cesarean deliveries. We wanted to be certain that we captured that in case there was some action there. So what did we find? As I said, initiation was high, so this is all mothers. Income was not significant, so there was really no essentially disparity by income. The significant predictors for breastfeeding non-initiation were being unmarried, not being black, multiparous, and having fewer pre-pregnancy preventive practices. And interestingly, if you recalled your doctor talking to you more about issues, you were less likely to initiate. It's a little counterintuitive, but we'll get back to that one. It's kind of interesting. And there's a phenomenon associated with it. For just the non-low income mothers, the only thing that popped out was being multiparous. You were at risk for not initiating. We won't go there about what that means yet. But interestingly, mother Hispanic, which was not significant in the overall model, was significant for the non-low income. And for the low income, again, fairly high initiation rates, I just want to point out. As similar to the overall model, unmarried, not black, multiparous, not doing a lot of pre-pregnancy preventive practices. And then they also, what came in here, is not seeking pre-pregnancy health care, which is kind of interesting and odd. But we think we have an explanation for that. As true with all things, you know, the world doesn't fall into nice little boxes. And so. But so when I put all this together, what you see are that there were five items that were significant in the overall model that had some significance in either low income or not low income. So marital status was in both all and low income. Maternal race was in the low income. Prior pregnancy was the only one that fell into all three as a factor. Pre-pregnancy health behaviors were only in, and the provider discussion was only in the low income and the all. And then there were these two ones like mother Hispanic and no pre-pregnancy preventive care that were not at all that fell into the low income. So it's like, what are we doing with this? I think it's equally important to look at what didn't come in. Education's not there. Age isn't there. In terms of being significant, these are factors that were controlled for, so they're in the model, but they didn't come up as being risk factors. Financial stress didn't come up. Health insurance type didn't. And some of these other aspects, like first trimester care start, infant in the NICU, delivery type, didn't surface as being, so they're built into the model, they just didn't come up as significant predictors. So then I took a step back and said, okay, so what else do we have here? I looked at the relationship of some of these other variables to what the odds ratio actually was and whether it fell over one or under one, to see if there was some difference between the two. And so I want to just briefly go through this. So for maternal education, for example, if you're a non-low income mother, you were at 2.5 times greater risk of not initiating if you only had a high school education and you were essentially more affluent. With only a high school education, you were more likely to not initiate. Interesting. For the low income mothers, similar kind of phenomena, less education, you are also at higher risk to not initiate. But these other, the comparison groups, you know, they're right around one, so it's not a lot of difference. The mother Hispanic was a very interesting story. So if you're a Hispanic mother and you're low income, you're going to initiate breastfeeding. 0.4 means that you were, being Hispanic protected you against not initiation, meaning you initiate. If you are a not low-income mother, so you're a little more affluent, and you're a Hispanic, you are not going to be breastfeeding. Not, I mean, it's too blanket a statement, but your risk was much higher to not breastfeed. So you kind of wonder if that's because they say, oh, well, we used to do that when we were poor, or what are the other barriers? It's an interesting phenomenon. Again, if we look at mothers' experiences related to financial stress, again, you'll see the difference. So if you have, whoopsies, if you have financial stress and you're low income, you're going to breastfeed. It lowers your risk. If you have financial stress and you're not low income, you're not going to breastfeed. Really? So, thank you. Similar phenomena with prenatal health insurance. So there's some things going on here with these differences. Went to the dentist during pregnancy. If you went to the dentist when you were pregnant, you're probably not going to breastfeed. Not a lot of action here if you're not low income. So when we start teasing this out, and this is the whole point of getting into the weeds of some of this local data to get to figure out what's going on at that local level. And if you're unmarried, was pretty significant that you weren't going to be breastfeeding or at least initiating, but not so much for the low-income mothers. So the story here is that nothing's ever fits into nice little boxes, and it's a little complex, but we also can't make assumptions about just because you're low income, what's going to motivate you to breastfeed or not. Just because you're Hispanic, what's going to motivate you to breastfeed or not. So the strengths of this are that we have fairly granular population level local data. We oversampled for our exposure of interest, which was income. We are limited to available data, that should have been in the limitation section. And we unfortunately had to eliminate some cases due to missing data. We have only women with English and Spanish literacy were included. Now that still represents most of the people in our community. We do have an increasing refugee population, but it's still a small part. And some of these data, including the key outcome variable, self-report with some ability to validate that with the hospital data. So we were able to identify some risks for non-initiating of breastfeeding. We had both low-income and non-low-income mothers had some different risks. We were able to identify some differences, and some of these have findings for have some implications for those that may be modifiable during pregnancy. So we may be able to do something more with this as opposed to just looking at the demographics that we can't exactly affect people's race. We can't affect whether they're married or not, et cetera, et cetera. So that is the end of my story here. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. We have time. We have 2 minutes for questions, and we'll have questions at the end for all the presenters. But if there are quick questions, yes.
Yes. So am I correct that your non-initiation was that they never breastfed even once?
Correct. Correct.
I've always been under the assumption since that they now in many hospitals get the baby to breast at least once by hospital practice, and that doesn't really represent initiation of breastfeeding. And if that's the case, some of that might differ by socioeconomic status, the extent to which they're able to force the baby on the mother at least once. Am I completely off base there, or is that a possible reason that you have these high initiation rates?
So do we have high initiation rates because of the hospital practices? Absolutely.
So
I think that's a piece of what we're capturing. If in fact it was as universal as we think it is, those rates should be maybe even higher.
Well, you think it would be able to do it to a woman who was in great distress on the COVID days, and so that might affect. But also, it might depend on what kind of what setting in the hospital woman is in.
Absolutely.
Might provide SBS, mm-hmm. And that might explain the difference.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's why it will be interesting to see when we start looking at just the initiators in this data set, how that goes forward in terms of the hospital practices, because that'll be our next piece. We have all the hospital practice questions in there, but they're only answered by women who initiated breastfeeding, so we can't apply them to the non-initiators. Thanks.
Yes. Rosie.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that's one of the questions that PRAM doesn't ask. We have another survey we did, but we have that in, but it's not in PRAMS. It's one of the things we're revising for our next go-round is to capture some of these other influences, because that's not in there. It's always stunning to me what's kind of not in some of the data sets that we genuflect around. So, but thank you. And I totally agree.
All right. Thank you, Anne.